Hello, I'm Thomas Hona, and this is number 0551, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0551. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Dr. Rana Al-Falaki, author of Women Who Want More. She talks about the advantages of working from home.
A lot of people actually thrive when they work from home. Not only the obvious things, such as the fact that they don't have a commute and they can actually start their day on time. And often if they haven't had a stressful commute, then they're starting off with a better and stronger mindset in the first place. But at the same time, they just generally, they reduce things that often cause them stress because of needing to work.
Actress Yvonne Sena-Jones, star of the Tyler Perry spin-off series on BET called The Oval, the new show is called Ruthless.
The big question that everybody's had since the first episode of The Oval is what happened to Ruth's daughter. This takes place after that. So you get to have the curtain pulled back and you see what actually happened with Ruth and her daughter in the Rakadushis. And it is dark and it is suspenseful and obviously characteristic of Mr. Tyler Perry. It has crazy twists and turns.
Carl Dow, author of the historical novel Black Grass that takes place in 19th century pre-Confederation Canada. The heroine of the story is a woman named Suzanne.
She comes from Nova Scotia. She's of Scottish-English background. She and her husband hauled together all the money that they could invest it in a schooner to ply the triangle, it was called, between North America, England, and Barbados. But unfortunately, the ship went down with her husband in a hurricane. And so she was nailed for, in lieu of non-payment of debts, and she was hauled into court. And in those days, if you didn't pay your debt, you were assigned bondage. You had to work as an unpaid slave until the money was made up.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0551, was Thomas Hona, an electrician out in BC and a Stuff File listener. Thank you very much, Thomas, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program. I appreciate you doing the guest late and also being a listener of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. 24-year-old Paul Joseph Garcia was arrested in Austin, Texas, after allegedly hitting a pedestrian while driving drunk and leaving the scene of the crash. Garcia did not, however, leave the victim behind. Police say 55-year-old Martin Cagle went through the windshield of Garcia's car, landing in the passenger seat. When Garcia arrived at his destination, a bar, he parked and went inside. Staff refused to serve the blood-covered Garcia, instead holding him for police. He was charged with DUI manslaughter and held on $110,000 bail. Police noted Garcia was speeding without his headlights on when he hit Cagle near Slaughter Lane. Yes, that's right. Slaughter Lane. There's the definition of irony. By the way, who goes into a bar when they're already completely plastered? Now, that's a drinking problem. And speaking of drinking problems, you've probably heard the recent story about a survey that says a percentage of Americans will not buy Corona beer because they believe it is linked to the coronavirus. The survey, which has a very small sample size, claim 38% of Americans say they won't buy Corona beer under any circumstances. This spread across the Twitterverse, but it seems Americans aren't as dumb as social media would like to make them out to be. Why do I say that? Because over the four-week period ending February 16th, sales of Corona in the U.S. has gone up 5%. That phone survey was conducted with 737 American beer drinkers. It made three claims. First, as I mentioned earlier, that 38% of Americans wouldn't buy Corona under any circumstances. Among those who said they usually drink Corona, only 4% said they would stop, but 14% said they wouldn't order Corona in a public venue. Finally, 16% of beer-drinking Americans were confused about whether Corona beer is related to the coronavirus. So, what have we learned from this extremely small sample of numbers? That non-Corona drinkers are still non-Corona drinkers. That's about all we can determine. That's it. Now, if sex in hazmat suits and face masks is your thing, there's now a market for you on Pornhub. Dozens of adult films with coronavirus as a theme have been uploaded to the popular porn site and are now going viral. Wow, there's an understatement. Videos titled Deserted Wuhan and TSA Agent Detains Woman Suspected of Coronavirus have been appearing. The actors involved don hazmat suits, face masks, and hospital gowns and are having sex in what appears to be medical facilities. Porn star duo Spicy X Rice, who appear in one of those films, says some of their videos serve as a public service announcement on how to prevent the spread of the virus and were made with the intention to educate people. They go on to say, "We thought we would use our porn as an avenue to get some legitimate information out with some comic relief included to get people interested. I think people are attracted to COVID-19 themed porn the same way people who are scared of their shadow are attracted to horror movies. We are all searching for things that make us come alive." Well, that's an unfortunate turn of phrase. The porn stars have told media the videos are inspired by old Delta Airlines safety videos. Some of the videos that fall under the coronavirus theme appear to be people in quarantine and trying to earn some cash while passing the time. Yeah, literally, a time killer. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Florida police department wants you to know that if you have recently purchased any illegal street drugs, you can bring it to their station to get it tested for coronavirus. The Atlantic Beach Police Department posted a PSA on their Facebook page. The tongue-in-cheek post issues a warning that if you recently bought cocaine, meth, heroin, or any other street drugs in their area, it might be contaminated with coronavirus. The police department goes on to urge those to bring their drugs to the police department for free testing. If you're uncomfortable going to the police department, police say they will come to you in the privacy of your own home. Wow. Now, at press time, I don't know if anybody has come forward yet for the testing, but if they do, and it's reported, look for that future idiot of the day to pop up. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, and it is linked to some of the stories we just mentioned. Many people are giving greater thought to working from home. The topic of working from home has been in the news lately because of the current concerns over the coronavirus. So I thought this would be a good excuse to bring up the topic of working from home. Dr. Rana Al-Falaki is the author of Women Who Want More, How to Create a Balanced and Fulfilled Life. She joins us on the line from London in the UK. Hi, Dr. Rana.
Hello, hello. Good morning to you. It's evening here.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, again, we're talking mostly about working from home, but since it's all wrapped up in this coronavirus scare, I do have to ask one question, and that is, you are actually in the UK, and in the UK, even post-Brexit, there is still a freer traveling of goods and people with open borders. Is it a bigger scare where you are than it is so far in North America?
I don't think so. I think this thing has just become global all round. As I, of course, I'm a medical practitioner as well as a life coach, so we have a mass shortage now, clinically, of masks and disinfectants. We are being rationed on what we can order into our clinics. The City of London is starting to shut down. People are scared to go out. People are, if they happen to see, it's really sad, if they happen to see anybody sniveling, it's almost just like a whole wave just parts for you to allow you to walk. There are talks going on at the moment about whether or not they should be banning flights, and exactly what you were saying about people coming in and out. There is a lot of panic, a lot of negativity, but I don't think it's any worse than the rest of the world right now, to be fair.
Okay. Well, let's get to the issue at hand, and that is working at home. And the reason why I find this an interesting topic is because I remember back in 1996 when Atlanta had the Olympics, the summer games, and there was some massive concern about congestion in the Atlanta area with the Olympics being held. And one of the things that many companies decided to do at that time was to offer the possibility of having their workers work from home to see how that would lessen the problem of traffic during the games. And some of the surveys and some of the studies that took place after that happened is they found out that they liked the idea of working from home. Some people who were working at home just for the Olympic period never went back to the office, so to speak. They continued working from home. So I'm just wondering, as a life coach and somebody that talks about this, is this a trend that once people start doing it, they say, I like this. How can I do this? Or how can I do more of this?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. We had just the same thing happen in London when we had the London Olympics back in 2012. Yes, most people, there are two schools of thought here, and it really depends on your personality type and your levels of self-motivation. So a lot of people actually thrive when they work from home, not only the obvious things such as the fact that they don't have a commute and they can actually start their day on time. And often if they haven't had a stressful commute, then they're starting off with a better and stronger mindset in the first place. But at the same time, they just generally, they reduce things that often cause them stress because of needing to work. So a lot of people work restricted hours. They can't get out to do their grocery shopping. They can't get out to walk their dog. They need someone else to come and do it. They can't get out to go to the doctors. They can't pop out to their kids' play or parents' evening because they're restricted by their hours at work. And so if you're generally quite a responsible, autonomous person, you thrive from working at home because you take on that responsibility. You start your day with a stronger mindset and you take responsibility for yourself right from the beginning. So it's almost becomes a win. Well, it does become a win-win situation with you and your employer that they allow you to be able to do the things you need to do, but accept that you will probably actually be more productive because you've got more energy in the first place and therefore get your job done. So that's the really positive side, which is fantastic. And so, yeah, people don't want to go back at the end of the day. You can have the negative side as well, where your social circles can start to be impacted upon. So this is what I said at the beginning about your personality. And so one of the big benefits we get from an interactive workplace is we thrive from connection, we thrive from relationships, we thrive from human contact as opposed to just phone calls, conference calling and social media. And so, you know, what the conversations that may go on at the coffee cart, the conversations that may go on at lunchtime amongst work colleagues, that social interaction is something we miss. And so, again, depending on your personality, people can just become a bit too isolated, and that can actually lead to not the typical work stresses we were talking about, but it can lead to a degree of anxiety and depression as well.
Now, your book is called Women Who Want More, and I bring that title up because, unfortunately, we still live in a somewhat patriarchal society, and I'm just wondering if it's a problematic situation more for women than it is for men, because women either are still expected to or still feel the need to be more of the person who takes care of the home, and if they're working from home, it seems like their work never ends.
Their work does never end, exactly. And, you know, and I know an awful lot of working women, myself included, who would say, you know, it would go back to work having had kids, and be, I go to work for a break, because it takes you away from the demands. You know, I coach a lot of men who work from home, and they absolutely love it. They thrive. It gives them the ability to be able to engage with their children and their families more than they would do. So in their case, they really thrive significantly. But exactly as you said, for women, sometimes it becomes difficult to differentiate their work life from their home life, because it's almost like they have two jobs anyway. And sometimes there can be a psychological impact on the relationship itself, because as the husband or partner comes home, thinking his wife or girlfriend or whoever it is has been at home all day, as opposed to, yeah, but they've been at home all day and they have truly been working. They've truly been having to do their job. So you know what? The dishes in the sink might not have been done. So it does require a degree of communication between the two, communication around the family, setting expectations from the outset of what that's going to look like. It has massive benefits, as we've said, but it does require preparation and planning. And planning, thinking, am I likely to get depressed? Is my social circle going to be diminished? What are the expectations of my family on me when they come home and maybe see that their dinner isn't ready because I have had to work? And so you really need to get everybody on board to prepare for that kind of environment if it's something you're going to do more than on just an ad hoc basis.
Even though, as I mentioned, going back to 1996, it's been a couple of decades now that more and more people are working from home, it's still a relatively modern idea. And I bring that up because you talked earlier about the social aspect of going to work. There's another side to the social aspect, and that is people who work at home, sometimes their friends and family that don't live with them don't really think they work.
Just like the family who do live with them may also be not feeling as if they're working. So absolutely, it's this almost being taken for granted or lack of respect for boundaries. And this is what I mean about needing to have that really strong communication in the first place. And as a woman needing to, you know, we often have issues with boundaries regardless, but it's another set of boundaries that they need to set, saying, I might be working from home, but I am working. It's funny, I had an interesting thing happen to me this week because my son was off sick. And obviously, I work from home as a coach. So the days I'm not treating patients in the clinic, I have offices at home. And I think he was expecting me to hang out with him and watch TV. And he's like, when are you going to be done? Because I would say, oh, I'm just going to do this. He said, okay, when are you going to be done? Okay, I've done that. Okay, you're going to come and sit with me? I said, no, I've got this to do and this to do and this to do and this to do. And, you know, the dishes were well and truly in the kitchen because I was focused on this is my job. And he was shocked. And I said, I don't stop. You guys go to school and I do not stop. I am working. This is what I have to do, whether it's at home or not. But then again, I'm a very focused, dedicated person. So I can, you know, and obviously I practice what I preach and what I teach. So I'm able to set those boundaries right from the offset. For me, working from home doesn't mean I'm going to pick up the phone and have a chat with a girlfriend or go out for a coffee.
I mentioned the Atlanta Olympics. You mentioned the London Olympics. We started off talking about the coronavirus. Do you think with each passing situation that forces people to be at home for one reason or another and work from there, do you think as time goes on, you know, we're going to see more and more people working from home because they initially had to, but they realize they like it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what's not to like? Like I said, as long as you do the preparatory work and think about, okay, how might this affect me? What blocks may come up? What barriers may I reach and how am I going to overcome them? I.e. set up the planning. I'm sure people will love it. But also, the other factor is the economic advantages to the company. So I know there are several companies that's starting to be a real trend now towards the fact that, of course, the companies don't have to provide office space. So of course, you know, people don't even have their own desks. So they come in, they might work from home 2 days a week, come into the office 3 days a week, and therefore desks are being shared. Offices don't need to be as big. Overheads are reduced. So companies love it too.
It's a fascinating topic. Are there types of personalities you would say that are not geared toward this, regardless of whatever job they might have?
Yeah. So that's into what I call the people in those in the kind of lower levels of energy, the people, and probably to an extent extroverts, because an extrovert is somebody who actually is relying on other people and other sources to feed them, to give them energy. Whereas an introvert, I mean, I'm an introvert, but I'm very outgoing. But I rely on myself to self-motivate and to energize myself. So actually, extroverts are probably people who really do need more of that social feeding. And then the other extreme of people who are potentially have a tendency for depression, or lower energies, you know, people who don't quite feel so powerful in themselves, people who are not quite as strong in the categories of autonomy and self-determination and self-motivation, they are likely to find things much, much harder if they were to work from home. But as with everything, there's a balance.
The book is called Women Who Want More, How to Create a Balanced and Fulfilled Life. Dr. Rana Al-Falaki, I thank you very much, Rana, for being on the program with us.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Dr. Rana Al-Falaki, author of Women Who Want More, How to Create a Balanced and Fulfilled Life. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0551, and you'll find links to Rana's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the star of the new BET television series, Ruthless. Plus, the author of Black Grass is also on the program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, for two whole years, Kaylee Wilkes nurtured a lovely green succulent in her kitchen window. She watered it, wiped dust off its leaves, and forbade anyone else from caring for it. It was full, beautiful coloring, just an overall perfect plant. That's what Wilkes wrote in her Facebook post on February 28th. Well, recently she decided it was time to transplant it into a pretty new pot. So imagine her dismay when she pulled up the succulent and realized it was plastic, rooted in styrofoam with sand glued to the top. How did I not know this? She wondered. I feel like these last 2 years have been a lie. Wilkes suffered from ridicule on social media, but her local Home Depot reached out with some real, living succulents that Wilkes can shower with love and attention. Yeah, what a happy ending. Gee, it must be nice to be gifted with a polypropylene thumb. And speaking of plastic, there seems to be a new trend in Japan, formal funeral services for love dolls, complete with rites led by a monk. At least, that's the claim of the Human Love Doll Company, which offers the service as well as the tautology, love dolls are born to be loved. Silicone soulmates shouldn't be tossed in the trash, and that's believed to be bad luck in Japan, hence the need for funerals to leave your latex lover. The 30,000 to 90,000 yen service, that's only 275 to 825 bucks US, includes the plastic paramour being processed by a highly certified industrial waste disposal company after the rites. At the highest price point, someone will read a letter to your polymeric plaything, and a part of the inanimate Inamorata's body will be sent to its owner afterward as a treasured keepsake. You know, I wonder if for a higher price they offer a choice of which part you get to keep. Domo arigato, Ms. Roboto. Yeah. An innovative jewel thief in Melbourne, Australia, was caught on camera using a fishing rod to burgle a Versace necklace from a store window on February 24th. The thief carefully broke a hole into the window to avoid setting off the alarm, then spent almost 3 hours trying to hook the costume jewelry necklace worth about 800 bucks. He worked with two different sized rods before finally snagging the necklace. Store owner Stephen Adigratti called the heist outrageous and courageous, although he suspected the thief was unaware that the piece was relatively inexpensive. This particular necklace looks a lot more expensive than what it is. It's gold, bright, iconic Medusa head, he explained. Police are still searching for the fisherman. I think they should search video surveillance for any adult spending an inordinate amount of time practicing on an amusement arcade claw machine. Just a thought. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Florida hospital worker is behind bars after authorities said he sucked on a female patient's toes. 23-year-old Franz Belderin, a sitter at Fort Myers Gulf Coast Hospital, was arrested on a charge of battery on a senior citizen. Lee County Sheriff's deputies said the victim, who had been sleeping, awoke after someone came in contact with the patient's toes. The victim later felt moisture on her toes and saw Belderin kneeling beside the bed. The patient alerted the nurse and deputies arrived to investigate the cause. You know, this poor patient is probably someone's mother. Someone's grandmother. Franz is just a toe-tasting, nail-biting, digit-digesting mother sucker. Yeah, anyway. Let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Yvonne Sinnott-Jones is one of the stars of the new Tyler Perry BET series called Ruthless. It's a spin-off from the series The Oval, where Yvonne had the recurring role of Tally. Yvonne joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, man, my pleasure.
So congratulations on the new, not the new role. I guess it's the similar role in the new show. Congratulations on getting that. First of all, let's go back a little bit. Tell us how you got the role of Tally and also how you found out that there was going to be a spinoff and you were going to be in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. It was an absolute dream come true. I got cast out here in Los Angeles from Kim Coleman. She was bringing me in for Tyler's pilots. As you know, he writes so many things in such a short amount of time. And so he had several pilots that were being cast in Los Angeles. And so I came in for a couple of roles and Tally was the one that I got. And it happened very quickly. I found out on a Friday and I was in Atlanta on a Monday. And then actually on my last day shooting with Tyler, I gave him a thank you card. That's what I do. And I said, thank you. And today's my last day on set. And he shook my hand and said, yeah, but it won't be your last time here. We're going to bring you back. And my jaw, I picked it up off the ground. And yeah, sure enough, in about, I would say, a couple of months, I received the script for Ruthless. And here was Tally again, but just in such a greater way, just expanded so much more. So it is such a dream come true, honestly, Peter.
Now, for those who have not watched on BET, The Oval takes place basically in, it's backstage at the White House, for lack of a better term, right?
Very good, yes.
So what... What is Ruthless? What is the spinoff? Where does this take Tally, and what's the story there?
Okay, so the big question that everybody's had since the first episode of The Oval is what happened to Ruth's daughter? What happened to Ruth's daughter? So we get to, this takes place after that. So you get to have the curtain pulled back and you see what actually happened with Ruth and her daughter in the Rakadushis. And it is dark and it is suspenseful and obviously characteristic of Mr. Tyler Perry. It has crazy twists and turns. And it's definitely something. I love the fact that we're going to drop three episodes because you're going to want that. You're going to want to get all three of those and then wait for each one every Thursday. But it is... It's epic when it comes to all the cliffhangers and the twists and turns that happen on this one.
Oh, so you can actually binge watch on conventional cable.
There you go. Well, on BET Plus, the streaming platform,
right?
You'll be able to do a binge. Yes, I know.
Excellent. Now, Tyler Perry, he has his hands in everything and everything he does. He's a creative genius who does literally everything. I'm sure when he coughs or has a cold, hundreds of people are worried because they're figuring, what am I going to do now if Tyler goes down? What's it like working with what is literally an entertainment whirlwind?
Oh, man, you have said it. You have said it best. He wears so many hats, but he wears them well. That's the thing. He has that place. It's a machine. It's down to a science. So when you're there and you see this high level that he holds himself to, that bar, you're going to match it with everything you have in it. And that's what I did, is that I just brought it as much as I could. And, you know, hopefully and prayerfully, you guys can let me know, I reached it. But he is an empire all to himself when you see him, just as tall as he is in stature. It's incredible to be there and see him work, and also to just be on this Confederate Army compound, knowing it's owned by him, and seeing all these beautiful people of color working and making magic, making complete magic.
Hmm. Now, for those who may not know who you are, if they haven't had a chance to see you on The Oval, people might remember that you played Robin Givens in BET's The Bobby Brown Story, but you have other credits that I want to bring up. You've been in SWAT, you've been on The Orville, and you've been on Code Black, and I've seen you in all three of those, by the way, so I just want to ask...
Thank you.
I just want to ask this one question, and that is, what is harder for you to do as an actress? Is it spitting out medical jargon in Code Black? Or is it the hours of makeup to play an alien on The Orville?
Oh, The Orville. Honestly, I'm such a nerd. You have no idea. I was so excited. So I would say the jargon, if we want to talk about what's more challenging, because my dad and I used to watch Star Trek. And so when I found out I got The Orville, I was through the roof. I took about an hour and a half to get put on, an hour and a half afterwards. I will say what's more uncomfortable is going to be that makeup, especially if you're on this side of the... the side of the hemisphere, as far as like we were in the jungle scene and it was so hot and this mask is glued to your face. that the uncomfortable, I would say, would definitely win out on The Orville, but I would do it again in a heartbeat, man.
How long did that makeup take?
It took an hour and a half to get in and an hour and a half to peel off.
and since you're never quite sure how high or of a collar or how far the costume goes, How far down do they have to go to do your face? Is it like above the breastplate or
collar?
Collar?
They got okay. the right about the collar line. So basically, whatever's covered by the a big chunky like neck collar, that's as far as they went. And they put the nice thing is they put a hood on first, so it's not like that part. They put the hood on, and then the face is what gets glued onto you.
So during that time when you're spending hours in the makeup chair, what do you do? Do you run lines? Do you read? Do you listen to music?
I actually just video recorded the whole thing because I just wanted to have a whole video of the process. Because, I mean, who knows when that's going to happen again, you know? And it, like I said, it was such a dream come true that there were definitely, I'm going to be honest, a lot of selfies throughout the process. And thankfully, I had already become off book on my lines. So had that not been the case, had it been like a crossover between Tyler Perry universe and that, oh, you better believe I'd be going over lines.
Now, again, I mentioned the Orville, the role you played there. I mentioned you played a medical professional in The Code Black. You played a police officer in SWAT. You've had a variety of roles. When you first got into acting, what are the things you saw yourself doing, envisioning your career going, and are you doing those? And is there anything that is still on your acting bucket list that you say, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to tackle?
Great, great, great question. I believe that happened with Tali because of the writer that Tyler Perry is, in that he is like Tennessee Williams. I come from theater, and the women that he writes are complex and layered, and their universes don't revolve around men. And so the arc, I just want a woman. I love to play women who have these strong arcs where they find their voice. And I got to tell you 100%, that's exactly what happens with Tali. So this role, honestly, I was so grateful to God for it. It felt like it was written just for me. And I was so honored to have the opportunity to portray her. Now, as far as those goals go, honestly, like I told you, I'm a nerd. I will love the day that I can play a superhero. Whether it's that Tyler Perry has decided that's where he wants to go with the series or something, or anything else, but I'm a big geek in that way, that someday, sometime, I want to be in some kind of a suit kicking butt.
When you get to embody a role for a long period of time, like hopefully you are with this particular role of Tali, is it a collaborative situation? Do you get an input into where her story is going, or is it just all out of the mind of Tyler Perry?
You know, in this sense, it's almost like there's no need for my input. It'd be like adding to Shakespeare, I feel like. So I just let him do what he obviously is the king of doing. And I just work on making sure that what he's written is what he sees, and I try as much as possible to, you know, and he's great. He actually allows us a lot of he doesn't get very nitpicky. So let me try that again. He allows us to do our jobs and the job that he hired us for, and we definitely allow him to do what he is great at. And so that kind of a collaboration and understanding makes for great, great work.
You also, in your, shall we say, spare time, you also teach acting to young kids of color, right?
I do. I have been teaching with a nonprofit called City Hearts LA. So it's City Hearts, Kids Say Yes to the Arts. I actually just taught this morning. They're doing Shakespearean, they're doing the scene from A Midsummer Night's Dream where Bottom turns into a donkey. And I, honestly, it is such a gift to get to do that, because the monotony and the rejection that can very often come with a career like this in entertainment is very much balanced out by the joy that they give me in seeing them progress, in seeing them find joy in acting, because sometimes I feel like we tend to forget that because it becomes such a business to us. So honestly, it is my heart, and I'm so grateful to have had that opportunity for all these years.
How old are the kids normally when you're teaching?
I have high schoolers. And I know everybody says, oh my God, high schoolers. But those guys, if you allow them to be silly, oh man, they'll go for it. and it's such a great gift for them because they're in that stage where they're supposed to be adults and they have to save face in front of everybody and identity and everything. But man, in my class, they get to just have imagination, run wild, and act like different, you know, characters. And it's really honestly a very therapeutic outlet for them.
Well, they're high school kids, so I hope they'll spend some time also watching Ruthless, which
they're
is,
very excited.
Which is premiering. It's premiering on March 19th. Yvonne, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. We should mention the show is on BET Plus. It premieres on March 19th, and thanks for being on the show. Good luck with it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Actress Yvonne Sinha-Jones, one of the stars of the new Tyler Perry BET series called Ruthless. The show premieres on March 19th on BET Plus. Check your local listings. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0551, and you'll find links to Yvonne's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Black Grass. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, an alleged shoplifter in Michigan made an ultra-low-speed getaway on a motorized Walmart shopping cart because she didn't feel like walking. Police say they were called when a Walmart customer in Fruitport Township saw 46-year-old Shirley Mason leave the store's parking lot on a motorized shopping cart, and officers located the suspect and an alleged male accomplice about 2 miles away from the store. Mason, who police said had an outstanding warrant for her arrest stemming from a previous incident at a Walmart store in Roosevelt Park, allegedly had up to $600 worth of stolen goods loaded onto the $1,200 motorized cart. The police report said Mason told officers she took the cart because she didn't feel like walking. Mason was arrested on a charge of organized retail crime in addition to the charge of second-degree retail fraud from the previous incident in Roosevelt Park. Luckily, she got a lift to jail, so she didn't have to walk anymore. And 21-year-old Ohio college student Mendel Weinstock kidded his sister Reva 5 years ago that when she gets married, he will bring a llama to the wedding as his plus one. So, when Reva tied the knot on March the 1st, Mendel made good on his promise, showing up with a rented llama named Shocky wearing a custom-made tuxedo. Reva was unamused, but conceded, "When my brother puts his mind to something, he gets it done." Mendel spent $400 to rent the llama, but said it was worth every penny. Shockey spent about 30 minutes taking photos with amused guests outside the venue, but friends who were in on the joke seated two inflatable llamas at one of the tables inside. Reva says she'll get her revenge. He should sleep with one eye open, she said. Ooh. Well, you know, his sister did say that he will do anything he puts his mind to. So I'm blaming her for this. I mean, she's handing out the invitations for the wedding. The easiest way around this was not to offer her brother a plus one. She should have said that he could only attend the wedding going stag. Oh, wait a minute. Then he probably would have brought a deer instead of a llama. Never mind. Let's just get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Carl Dow is a journalist who has worked on such publications as the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Telegram, and the Montreal Star. He has written his first novel called Black Grass, a romance story with a twist that takes place in 1866, not far from what is now Winnipeg, Manitoba. Carl joins us on the line to talk about his book from Ottawa. Hi, Carl.
Hi. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So your story, as I said, takes place basically in the 1800s. What is it about this story that drew you to creating this saga in this time period?
I wanted to write a novel that dealt with Canada, and I wanted to write about someone who was not killed, like poor old Louis Riel. I wanted to write about someone who did his thing and survived, as did Gabriel Dumont. And so when I started writing about him, interestingly enough, I started writing him and I had pictured him as being of a certain character. Then I said, well, I better look this guy up. And I did. And it turned out that my assessment of this guy was exactly what historians have said about him. So I was pleased with that and kept on trucking.
So your book, Black Grass, is not a historical, it's historical fiction. In other words, there are real people in it, but this is a story you created?
That's right. Some people have read it and they think it's actual history, but it's not actual history. But many of the things that I talk about are historical. The title, Black Grass, I don't know whether I should mention this or not, but it can keep people in suspense. But anyway, prairie fires were used as a weapon in the Old West. That's where the name Black Grass comes from. So it's not a different kind of dope that you smoke. It's taken from an historical fact. Yeah, and there are a lot of historical things in it that are factual, but it's essentially a novel.
The fiction part of it is the heroine you created, Susanna. Tell us about Susanna.
She comes from Nova Scotia. She's of Scottish-English background. She and her husband got hauled together all the money that they could, invested in a schooner to ply the triangle, it was called, between North America, England, and Barbados, and back. But unfortunately, the brand new schooner, really a sleek job, the ship went down with her husband in a hurricane. And so she was nailed for, in lieu of non-payment of debts, and she was hauled into court. And in those days, if you didn't pay your debt, you were assigned bondage. You had to work as an unpaid slave until the money was made up. However, she didn't like that, so she took off. Some guy went after her. What are they called?
Bounty hunter?
Bounty hunter. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
The bounty hunter went off her, and he captured her twice. She escaped twice, and then she enters the novel looking for Gabriel Dumont, because everybody said, if you want help, if you want this or that, everybody says, go find Gabriel Dumont. And I quote Inspector Steele of the Northwest Mounted Police. He has nothing but good to say about Gabriel Dumont, and he ends up saying, when in trouble, the cry of all was for Gabriel. So anyway, the story starts with, the novel starts with Gabriel Dumont looking for Pierre Laforge, who's coming up the trail with information about the Fenians who are organizing to
take the Northwest to bargain for the freedom of Ireland. I have empathy for the Fenians, as I do for the Indians, but this is a story about the Métis, you see, and about how they dealt with crisis. That which I write about the Fenians is all correct. They took Fort Erie. They were attacking Canada all the way from the west coast to the Rocky Mountains at different times, but eventually they all failed. The only victory they had was in Fort Erie. The attack on Fort Garry, which was the center of not the Canadian government, but of the well, at that time it was the Hudson's Bay Company headquarters. They wanted to take Fort Garry and then declare the Northwest as their territory, and then bargain with England about the freedom of Ireland, which was a good cause, mind you, as far as I'm concerned. But in any case, it ran against something that the Métis did not want to put. And that's an historical fact. The Métis did a lot of trading down to St. Paul. Thousands of caravans would go down there eventually, but they did not want the Americans to take over their country. I mean, as a matter of fact, my novel is set in 1866, but in 1849, the Hudson's Bay Company was trying to stop the Métis from trading down to St. Paul and American trading posts. So they tried to stop them, and the Métis they surrounded the fort, and they had victoriously protested the Hudson's Bay Company interference in their trade.
This country is a country that has a wide and expansive history from sea to shining sea. What is it about this particular region, pre-basically Winnipeg or Manitoba region of the country, the Métis area of the country, what is it that fascinated you in that you decided to write this novel?
What fascinated me was the fact that they fought and they won. And the leader, Gabriel Dumont, was not hung. That's the main thing that I liked about it, is that they had this rebellion. But this novel, unfortunately, not unfortunately, but in fact, does not deal with 1885 rebellion, which came, needless to say, a few years after 1866. But it does deal with the Métis, the people themselves, how they lived, what their interests were, and how they defended their territory.
Before you even started writing, how much research did you have to do in order to, color in the texture of the story you were creating?
It's hard to respond to that. I get that asked that a lot. But the thing is, what you do is, as you go through life, you pick things up and hold them, right? And then when it comes to writing, the stuff comes out, and that. So I didn't do any heavy duty specific research. It's just material and information that I picked up in living and keeping an eye out for things. I know that's not a satisfactory answer, but it is exactly what happened. So when it came to writing it, I had most of it in my head.
As someone who spent an entire career as a journalist, and you are also writing a story that is fiction but has a kernel of truth in it, how different is the writing process for you from basically what you did for a living? How is writing a novel different from what you did as a journalist all those years?
Well, writing as a journalist had its ups and downs. I spent, when I was writing for Weekend Magazine and Canadian, I don't know if you know those publications, but they're both dead now, but they had 2 million circulation each, and they were inserts in all the newspapers in Canada. I remember spending 5 days on the first paragraph of a story that had to do with the mayor of Montreal, as a matter of fact, Jean de Rapeau. Who was the mayor of Montreal, and had to do with that, and I had to, it was a sheer torture getting the thing right. It was 5 days in that first paragraph. But other times, it comes very quickly. I mean, hard news is easy, because who, what, when, where, why, and how, in 18 words or less, was how I learned the trade. And of course, but today you don't have that anymore. You've got, they ramble all over the place, and they're full of opinions, and they, you know, the amount of information that you get is very unsatisfying as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, so and the Black Grass was written with, well, it's I would sometimes say it's like taking a pen and
jabbing it into my vein and taking the blood and writing it, you know. It's very hard work, very, very hard work. But because so much of journalism is formalized, just, you know, like I said, who, what, when, where, why, and how, you get that who down, you get that who, what, you know, what happened, and where, why, and it's so, it makes it, that formula makes it simple and quick most of the time. Sometimes it's not.
The book is called Black Grass. It's written by Carl Dow. Carl, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Carl Dow, author of Black Grass. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0551, and you'll find links to Carl's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A Florida middle school student mistakenly released pepper spray after grabbing what he thought was a canister of body spray from another student. School district officials in Jacksonville say the seventh grade student has been issued a civil citation for the February 28th incident at Highlands Middle School. 41 students were sent to hospitals for treatment of minor injuries that day. Officials say the student who brought the pepper spray to school will also face disciplinary action for bringing a banned substance onto the campus. You know, that's the kind of kid who one day will confuse a tube of hemorrhoidal cream for toothpaste. Because why? Oh, why? Would you think pepper spray was actually Axe body spray? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0551. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0551. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.